Welcome to Across Acoustics, the official podcast of the Acoustical Society of America's Publications Office. On this podcast, we will highlight research from our four publications. I'm your host, Kat Setzer, editorial associate for the ASA. Today we're talking to Christina Nafee, whose article, What is an Acoustic Metamaterial, appeared recently in Proceedings of Meetings on Acoustics, and is based off a talk she gave at the 184th ASA meeting in Chicago. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today, Christina. I've been really curious to know more about metamaterials, since they really are a hot topic in the acoustics community these days. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to get to talk about this POMA and the presentation. It was kind of an interesting experience, unique.
Yeah, it sounds very unique. So first, just tell us a bit about your research background.
Yeah, so I got my bachelor's in mechanical engineering at UC Berkeley and my master's and PhD in material science at the University of Southern California. In general, my research has been on acoustic materials, specifically metamaterials, for the last 15 years or so. I also do a lot of research on 3D printing or additive manufacturing and how we can use 3D printing to enable new acoustics. During my professional career, I've worked at the Jet Propulsion Lab, the Naval Research Lab, and for the past 3 years, I've been at the Applied Research Labs at the University of Texas, Austin. In terms of actual metamaterials research, I've done a pretty wide range. I've worked on designs for underwater, for air. I've do design, building, testing with a range of functionalities from antennas to sound blocking materials to materials that can steer waves. I've been an ASA member since around 2009, and I'm the current chair of the Structural Acoustics and Vibrations Technical Committee.
Awesome. So before we get into what a metamaterial is, can you tell us how this presentation and paper came about?
Sure. I'll start off by describing what was kind of unique about this presentation. Instead of a typical ASA or technical talk where I shared information with the audience, this presentation included a combination of me sharing information with the audience and then asking for feedback directly from the audience. I used a software or website called Mentimeter to engage with the audience and let them provide real-time feedback to questions that I posed to them. There were two main motivations for this. One is that I've had hallway discussions for years with colleagues about what is or is not a metamaterial. Some people have very strong feelings about, you know, this research topic is definitely a metamaterial and this one is definitely not. Some of those differences are relatively subtle, but some people feel really strongly. The second motivation is that we have a standing acoustic metamaterial session in the Structural Acoustics and Vibrations TC. That's been going on since the Boston meeting in 2017. This was set up in order to always have a session for metamaterials and avoid conflicts where there's no session and then talks get put into a variety of different sessions. And I've been co-chairing this standing session since 2017. Because of that, I've seen hundreds of talks on acoustic metamaterials, and the majority of them, even though the topic has been presented at the ASA for a while now, begin with an author-supplied definition of what is an acoustic metamaterial. Again, since those definitions vary, I thought it would be interesting to see if the community could agree on any common themes and what those themes would be. As for the style of presentation, specifically the audience participation, I was actually inspired by Lily Wang's keynote lecture at the Denver meeting in 2022. She used Mentimeter to encourage audience participation in her keynote. And I liked the idea of an ASA talk not being a one-way flow of information. And this seemed like an interesting topic to try that out, basically.
Yeah, that sounds like a really fun presentation to be involved in or session to be involved in. Especially since it sounds like the concept of a metamaterial is so nebulous in a way. So I'm going to steal a question directly from your article. Why do we use the word metamaterial?
The word metamaterial, as far as I can tell, to describe a class of materials, was first coined around 1999 by the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency in a report. That report aimed to gather information about artificially constructed materials which possess qualitatively new responses that do not occur in nature. So that's the first sort of reference to that word that I've seen. The origin of the word itself, meta, coming from Greek, and meaning beyond or after. So metamaterials are materials that are beyond materials, essentially.
Okay, interesting. So how did metamaterials initially come about?
That's a little bit hard to pinpoint. I would say the theoretical framework that most people consider to be the origin of sort of designing materials with exotic properties, most people would point to a paper in 1967 by Victor Vesalago. That paper had to do with electromagnetics, not acoustics, and published a theoretical analysis of materials that would have negative permittivity and permeability. So permittivity relating to like an electrical response and permeability relating to a magnetic response.
Okay.
Those unique properties weren't demonstrated until 30 years later, around 1999, and the field has grown since then. It's important a little bit to make distinction about effective properties, because when we say negative properties, those are properties that are based on a dynamic response to a stimulus, not a static response. And that becomes important when we move to the realm of acoustics, where we're talking about things like density and modulus, and negative density tends to get some people's feathers riled. So
Okay. So let's actually make that transition. You said metamaterials started with a focus on electromagnetic waves, but how did they end up getting adopted for acoustic purposes?
Acoustics and electromagnetics are very similar. They're both waves. And instead of permittivity and permeability, so electric field and magnetic field, in acoustics, we can think about the fact that propagation of a wave is controlled by designing effective density and bulk modulus. So if we think about those negative effective properties that we saw demonstrated in electromagnetics, the analogs to those would be negative effective density and bulk modulus. Bulk modulus is the measure of resistance to a substance to bulk compression. So when you squeeze on something from all directions, how much it compresses. And it's important to remember that negative density is an effective property, like I said. And so if we think about density in terms of Newton's second law, which is like force equals mass times acceleration, if the force on an object and the acceleration on an object are going in opposite directions, then that equation says that the density or effective density or mass has to be effectively negative. And then similarly for bulk modulus, if you squeeze on something and it expands, again, as an effective property, that would be negative effective bulk modulus.
Interesting. Okay. So for this study, you reviewed the literature to see the different way researchers define metamaterials. How did you go about doing this and what did you find?
So as I said for the article, the first place I looked for this presentation in particular was Wikipedia. For someone who doesn't know anything about this field and hears a buzzword, that's going to be the first place they looked. And I wanted to just see what that said. I then surveyed review articles, of which there are many. This field has been around for 20 plus years, and so there have been a lot of review articles over the year. In the interest of time, I stuck to review articles because there are thousands of papers on metamaterials. But I figured by quoting or investigating review articles, I could cover definitions supplied by leaders in the field. So people who are experienced enough to write a review article would likely have a unique definition. In this presentation, we highlighted some of the recurring themes across those articles, but the review article definitions vary widely. So in one paper, the author said that in order to be a metamaterial, the material must be artificial, typically but not necessarily periodic, composed of small meta atoms, and in their bulk response have unconventional properties. Another review article says that the material must have properties found in nature, and that's it. So there's a really wide definition of like how specific people are about like it has to have these six things or just this one thing.
Interesting.
And that kind of feeds into this dialogue.
They even sound a little bit contradictory at times.
Yes.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I thought was interesting, and to poll the audience, I asked what people thought the first acoustic metamaterial was. In many review articles that include some sort of history or background as to the field, a specific paper that was published in Science in 2000 it's called out as the first acoustic metamaterial, but in careful reading of that article, they actually don't use the word metamaterial at all. And so I wanted to kind of ask the question about whether that material was a metamaterial to gauge whether, you know, if the author doesn't say it's a metamaterial, is it?
Right.
The overwhelming majority of the audience said that it was. So I thought that was kind of interesting. That's a very early paper, so I don't know, you know, how much stock to put in that, but I thought it was an interesting assessment that even though the author of that paper didn't specifically say that that was a metamaterial, the audience said that it was.
Right. Well, if the author didn't know about the concept of metamaterial yet, like, would they today apply that term to their work?
I think it's likely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's likely. Subsequent articles by the same authors on similar types of structures. And I'll point out that something that's interesting about metamaterials is that they're not materials the way that we might conventionally think of a material, like aluminum or, you know, plastic or ceramic, things like that. The metamaterials are aggregates of those materials arranged in specific order and or disorder, arranged in a specific way to elicit a specific response.
Mm.
So you can make an aluminum metamaterial.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a plastic metamaterial. You can make materials out of other base materials. So when you see a metamaterial paper, the picture of the material itself may not look like a material the way that you may think, but the order in which things are arranged, so what we refer to as a microstructure, which is a structure of the way that a material is cut or assembled, elicits the unique response.
Okay. So let's talk a bit about that polling that you did. So for this presentation, you actually polled your audience about metamaterials to crowdsource some answers to various questions. How did you decide on the questions that you used?
Ultimately, the goal of the questions was to feed into a common definition, if we could come to one. So when we set out to compile this presentation, we knew from the start that we wanted to turn it into a POMA. It's a good way to capture this sort of unique presentation style and the results of the polls. And a POMA is a perfect way to do that. So in order to set the stage for the more technical questions that were later in the presentation, we actually started by asking the room, which had about 50 audience members, how long they had researched metamaterials. This is useful in the context that the rest of the questions, you know, rely on basically some knowledge of the state of the field. And so if people were not familiar at all with the topic, then the responses to those questions would be, you know, certainly skewed by that. Because this was in an acoustic metamaterial session, most of the audience, I think only a handful of people said that they don't study metamaterials at all. And the most common response was about 0 to 2 years. And that was just, like I said, to kind of give context for the responses to the answers to the questions.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So you also asked the audience a number of questions regarding whether or not various materials are actually metamaterials. What were some of the examples that you used and how did folks respond?
We structured a series of questions titled, Is it an acoustic metamaterial? Centered around specific themes that tend to reoccur in the acoustic metamaterial literature. The themes that we picked were porous media, so structures or materials that have holes in them, Helmholtz resonators, perforated panels, and bubbles. And then we picked a range of examples for each of those topic areas and asked the audience whether each example was a metamaterial. The examples were also chosen so that one or two of those examples we were pretty sure people would say were metamaterials because, for example, the author specifically called them that, or for people in the field, those were relatively well-known examples. And then picked similar types of examples from the literature that are sort of related to that metamaterial design, but in a different field. So for Helmholtz resonators...
Can you define what a Helmholtz resonator is?
Oh, sure. It's like a bottle. So you know how when you blow across the top of a bottle and you can, like, a sound from that?
Yes.
And if you change the amount of, you know, water in the bottle, you get a different sound.
Yes.
That's an example of a Helmholtz resonator. So It's a mass spring system. The spring is the air inside the bottle, and the mass is actually the air inside the sort of neck of the bottle. So you can get like a resonant response from that.
Okay.
Or like a resonant response being like a single frequency response.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
So for Helmholtz resonators, people have shown that you can arrange a series of Helmholtz resonators and get negative effective properties. But Helmholtz resonators are also used in architectural acoustics to change the acoustic response of a room, including designs from a POMA that I found dating back to the 15th century when they obviously weren't calling that a metamaterial. And so the question was, is that design from the 15th century a metamaterial if they have Helmholtz resonators designed to elicit a specific acoustic response? In general, only about a third of the audience said that it was, but a paper from 1952, also on tuning Helmholtz resonators, was voted as a metamaterial by half the audience. So I'm not really sure what to make of that. I think some of it is just people have their own idea about what should or should not be. Ultimately, those three designs, the one that we call a metamaterial, or the authors did, the paper from 1952, and the architectural acoustic examples are all arrangements of Helmholtz resonators.
Right.
And people had very different opinions about which ones were metamaterials or not.
That's very interesting. So how did the audience end up expanding on or editing the definitions that you found in the literature?
So the definition that I collected, or we collected from the audience, was primarily achieved by asking the audience to populate a word cloud. A word cloud shows words or ideas, phrases, things like that, submitted by the audience. And as more people submit the same exact word, that word grows in size to emphasize its importance. So we asked the audience for words or phrases that describe an acoustic metamaterial and allow each participant to submit up to 4 entries. So the word cloud is included in the POMA, and the word with the most submissions was subwavelength. One thing I noticed that was interesting from that word cloud was that the idea of extraordinary properties, which was really important sort of in the initial definition of metamaterial, did not show up as a very defining feature in the word cloud. It's definitely there, and it's there in several forms, but it's not the most defining feature of what the audience said a metamaterial was. Even less common was the idea that the response that was designed had to go beyond, right, this idea of, you know, really exotic properties. And in general, I would say that the definition was narrower than I expected. This is especially true compared to the Wikipedia definition. That definition includes a phrase like sonic crystal as being equivalent to metamaterial. And whether those things are equivalent, I don't know the answer. I think it would have been interesting to ask the audience whether they think a sonic crystal, which is just a periodic array of individual scatterers. So if you imagine a bunch of spheres arranged in a uniform manner, that would generally be referred to as a sonic crystal. It could also be a metamaterial. Wikipedia says that they're the same. I don't know that didn't come out in the poll or in the word cloud.
Right. Did the session end up changing your definition of an acoustic metamaterial?
I think the main thing that sort of stood out to me was the emphasis on sub-wavelength structure. I don't necessarily always include that in my definition. I've called things or thought of things as metamaterials that do not have a sub-wavelength structure. And by sub-wavelength structure, I mean that so if you have a bunch of scatterers, a bunch of spheres, for example, sort of all arranged uniformly in what we would call a lattice, so spaced evenly from each other, a lot of convention in the field indicates that the spacing between two of those scatterers has to be smaller than the wavelength of an impinging wave in order for the bulk arrangement of spheres to be considered a metamaterial.
Okay.
That has to do with sort of this idea of a homogenized property so that the wave doesn't necessarily see, or I use the word see kind of awkwardly, but that's how we describe it. The wave doesn't necessarily see in each individual sphere. It sees the collection of them. That's very similar to kind of the way that we physically see, you know, materials. So if I look at the door I don't see individual atoms. I see a bulk response of the atoms that make up the door.
Right, got it.
And that's just because the wavelength that we see at in the visible electromagnetic spectrum is larger than the spacing of those atoms. So we do the same thing in metamaterials to arrange what would be called meta-atoms and get a bulk response. But I've definitely called things metamaterials that don't have that specific property. I also don't know that I've ever really written down a definition for myself of like what is or what is not a metamaterial. So one of the reasons for doing this presentation was to crowdsource, right?
Right.
To kind of figure out what does the community think, especially because there's so many different definitions. People feel very strongly, like I said, and to try to gauge what are the common themes.
Okay. Yeah. So did you have any other major takeaways from these poll questions with regards to what researchers consider to be metamaterials?
I think the major takeaway that I had, which I knew going in, but was definitely reaffirmed via this exercise, is that there's no definition. The definition of metamaterial is in the eye of the author or the researcher or the person in the audience who's listening to a talk. If someone says that their research topic is a metamaterial, then, you know, then it is. If someone says that it's not, then that's fine too, especially because there isn't an agreed upon definition. So
interesting.
That was my major takeaway.
I feel like that could end up with a lot of arguments among the research community.
It has. And that kind of speaks back to one of my original motivations is sort of the hallway arguments or discussions I've seen, you know, with my peers about which boxes you have to check.
Right, right.
In order to make something a metamaterial.
Right. Do you have any other closing thoughts?
I thought this was a really fun exercise. I think it would be interesting and engaging to see more of this type of sort of dialogue between a presenter and an audience at ASA conferences. It's a really fast way to get feedback on the state of a research topic. And ultimately, specifically from this, you know, this presentation, whether something is called a metamaterial is not really important. It's a word that we use to sort of classify a field of research. Specific examples, whether they fall into that field or not. Like I said, it's in the eye of the author. Yeah.
Right, right.
I do hope that people enjoyed the presentation in Chicago. I think I got feedback from it and people seem to like the interaction. And I encourage people to take a look at the POMA and see the full results of the survey. And yeah, check out the word cloud. I think it was an interesting arrangement or aggregation of thoughts on this topic.
Yeah, it's a really interesting POMA. We will link to it in the show notes so folks can go see it. Definitely recommend looking through it. It sounds like a really fun presentation, and hopefully it will, you know, maybe inspire other people to set up sessions like this to create this dialogue, because it does sound like a lot of fun and maybe helpful for the community to kind of expand how we think about, you know, like you said, the major topics or hot topics or new topics. It's really fascinating to think about how nebulous this concept of metamaterial is, even if it's so prevalent in research today.
Yeah. I mean, these talks have been around, you know, at the ASA for almost 15 years, and we still can't agree.
Yeah, right. Right.
And the field has been around for almost 25 years, and there's no consensus, you know, about what's important. The audience said subwavelength was really important. Some review article definitions don't even mention that as a requirement.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was interesting, right? I mean, that was the main goal, was to elicit a response and try to see if there was a consensus.
Yeah.
I don't think there is. That's okay.
Well, I found this really interesting, and I hope that our listeners have enjoyed this discussion as well. And hopefully it will expand folks' thoughts about how the concept of what metamaterials are and how they can be used. Thank you again for taking the time to speak with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. This was really fun. And I really enjoyed sort of going back through the POMA and the presentation and getting an opportunity to talk some more about sort of how it came to be.
Thank you for tuning into Across Acoustics. If you would like to hear more interviews from our authors about their research, please subscribe and find us on your preferred podcast platform.